the 53rd episode. Fourth, 54th episode of Does Your Favorite Movie Suck? Where we revisit great movies from the 80s and 90s and 90s. My name is Kaylin Egan.
My name is Travis Sintel. Hey. Excited to be here.
So we took a long... I know that this is now, we're 1 week back, but let's be real. Our vacation really started after we recorded episode 53.
Relevant information to the listener.
And by vacation, I mean sick bed.
I got real sick, you guys.
I've been ready to go for weeks, you guys.
I want to talk about this
movie. I've been getting some notes that are like, where is it? Where's the show?
Okay.
Where's the show?
I call bullshit.
No, I got a number of them.
How many? Be honest.
Four?
Four?
Yes.
That's a lot of notes.
I'm telling you, man, people need us.
That's 80% of our listener base cares where we went.
They all said similar things and not coordinated. They said, like,
I miss you.
Monday is empty now.
Well, here we are, filling your Monday for you once again.
Filling your Monday for you.
Kaylin, besides Mike Garner...
Can I say something else?
...forming our podcast for us.
Oh, no.
This film is one of the impetai
okay.
for this That's podcast.
True. You did
it's
talk
the
about...
The subsidiary reason for this podcast existing was my terrible experience
yes.
at Cinespia
yes.
with this film.
Yes.
Shall I tell you about it?
Well, you have told us about it.
I know,
but now that we're gonna delete episodes.
The new season.
Yep.
So guys, what happened was about 2 years ago, a year and a half ago now, I often will frequent something called Cinespia or Cinespia, depending on who you talk to. At the Hollywood Forever Cinespia. Cinespia.
I see.
At the Hollywood Forever Cemetery where they show classic films from the '80s and nineties that actually might suck. Some might say great films. I see maybe two a season. Kaylin, when's the last time you went?
Yeah, I went last year. We went to Poltergeist.
Oh, that's awesome.
We're
going to see Kaylin, his wife, my girlfriend, and myself are going to see Clueless.
We are?
Yeah, end of May. So expect a special guest episode about that.
I have not committed to that.
You've also committed to dressing up. More on that later.
Oh my
yeah,
God.
I know. Let's just deal with that. So
let me just offer a piece of advice for anybody who like has a friend.
All right, listen up. Half our listeners turn this off right now.
Don't, but half don't you guys let listen. Them interact with your family on an independent basis.
Yeah.
Because then your life is sort of derailed.
You get roped into things yeah. that you secretly want to do but are embarrassed to suggest. So I dragged a bunch of my friends to go see The Dark Crystal, a movie I had very exceedingly fond memories of from as a child. I had referenced Skeksis in the last year. It was in my parlance, in my modern vernacular. I remembered a lot of things I thought from the film. My friends who I took did not know the film that well. Thought they had seen it, were fairly confident, and I was like, trust me, it's really good. Frank Oz used all his cachet to make this movie.
He's Frank Oz?
Not Frank Oz.
Henson!
Sorry, Henson used all his cachet to make this film. It's good, that guy's great. And they're like, okay, cool, we trust you, we'll go.
Yeah.
You seem to know things about films sometimes. And I went, and within 45 minutes, the sneaking suspicion that I dragged my friends to something that really sucked crept in, and then when the movie ended, it was just silence. We packed up our blanket. And we packed up our picnic basket, and people were a little perturbed by the film.
Your
and,
friend group.
Were, yeah, were and myself also.
Right.
It was not at all what I had remembered. And then this sneaking suspicion that my childhood memories were flawed took root. And Kaylin and I started talking, and then hence this podcast.
And you were like, how can I recapture that feeling of deflation and disappointment
for everyone
on a week-to-week basis?
Every Monday, how do yeah. I bring people down the way I feel right now?
Yeah. But let me ask you this about that, because I don't think I asked you this last time, but was the mood at the screening one of like a graveyard full, they do these things at the cemetery, a graveyard full of disappointed, Dark Crystal fans?
Had I been to only that one, I wouldn't have been able to answer that question. But having been to maybe 10 in my life of these screenings, it was a noticeably somber exodus from the cemetery.
Oh my God.
It was not the normal thing. People were stoked. Some people were really stoked about it.
Right.
People cheered. People liked it. But compared to other exoduses from those screenings, this was a somber exodus. Where I think a lot of people... My sense was a lot of people were in the same scenario I found myself in, which is we've dragged people we care about to a film that kind of sucks.
Wow. So you think potentially they were all having some version of that experience, or not all, but like many of them were being like, I loved this as a kid. This is a beautiful night. We're going to go out. We're just going to experience this flood of nostalgia and a great movie. And they all, many of them maybe came away with that feeling.
I honestly think that.
I bet you you're right. And that makes me very excited to watch this because I have seen this one time maybe. Like honestly, like one time maybe. And I know I've seen plenty of it. And
as a kid?
As a kid.
Oh, please tell me what you remember about it.
I remember almost nothing.
I've soiled this for you in many ways now. I've kind of ruined the experiment of the podcast. But tell me.
No, you haven't though because I don't. It's weird, man. I don't.
What are the Skeksis?
I don't believe you.
Tell me, what are the Skeksis?
Are those weird things that look like they're in rags on a, and they like to have a big brown like rag thing and they're big kind of hulking guys and they like maybe are on stilts or something? Sort of,
you're talking about the Mad Max guys, but
well, but that's what they look like, right? Yeah, yeah, yeah. And they're big. Yeah. And I remember a real like dorky looking like what are those things that live underground? The Rascals? The Fern Gully Rascals? What am I? The Fraggles.
Yeah, Fraggles.
He looks like that. Like, he's the main character. He's like a little boy, and he's like, I'm a fucking Fraggle.
Yeah, okay, that's fair. I mean, he's designed to be an attractive Fraggle. That's the costume puppet, so the puppet design.
Well, here's what I'm expecting. And even though you say it's not good, here's the thing. I'm excited that we haven't done a Jim Henson movie yet, and I'm very eager to get into his art. And the idea that, you know, the road to Dark Crystal is a pretty interesting one. You know, they started doing these sort of dark things on Saturday Night Live that sort of became the Muppets, that sort of became Sesame Street, you know, and that then this is pre-Labyrinth, right? Like, this is the one where he's like, finally I can do a fantasy epic using puppets, which I believe in as like an artistic form.
Which is a great idea.
Yeah, and I can't wait to watch those fucking puppets. And so maybe it'll be boring, but I'm really eager to feel what he thought he was doing.
What do you think the plot of the film is? This will be interesting.
No idea.
Yeah, take a wild fucking stab. So you know, well, there's a main character who's an attractive prince-looking puppet.
I guess.
Not the artist.
Here's my guess. And I mean, I'm just going to import other fantasy narratives.
That's fine.
There's a darkness on the land. And there's an object called the Dark Crystal, which maybe is the key to lifting this shroud of darkness that's over the land. And those rag guys are the keepers of the crystal, and they go around spreading that darkness. And you got to beat those guys.
Two questions.
Yeah.
Is it a quest film? Do you think?
It would make sense to me if it was. Yes.
Question two: is it a love story?
I think there's a Fraggle girl.
Uh huh.
Pretty
Fraggle.
Sure.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Do you think that love story lands or has the potential?
I don't know. I don't know.
All right. No. I would argue no and yes.
I don't think I'll be swept up in the human emotions, puppet emotions of the story.
But you would agree, I suspect, that it is quite possible to tell a puppet story that lands real human emotions. I would assume you would agree with that.
Yeah.
So the potential is there.
But look, here's what I'm expecting. This is based on everything you have said. I'm expecting to like this the way I'm hoping to like this the way that I like David Lynch's Dune, or the way that I, in some ways, the way that I like Akira. And I know it's not going to be loaded with content like that, but it's a weird ass world that somebody put on film. And I just want to go look at it. I just want to go check it out. And it might be the thing that would be worst is if there's only like two worlds and it's like there's not a lot of cool stuff.
Here's why I am excited. By the way, Jordan Peele in talks to direct Akira. Strange.
Yeah, I saw that.
Yeah. Anyway, I am actually really excited to see this film because with this podcast, with 53 episodes and counting, episodes of this podcast under my belt, and having never thought about this prior to seeing The Dark Crystal for the second time 20 years later, I really, really honestly bet I will like this movie a lot more than I did. For two reasons. The first is that the onus of responsibility for my friend's enjoyment was weighing heavily on me.
Right.
Because I was the one who said, we have to go see this specific film of this. It's the one movie we saw that season of Cinespia.
Yeah.
I was like, this is the one, you guys. We have to go see this. It's going to be great. And what a great environment to see this film that I love from my youth. It's the perfect tone and the perfect movie for this environment.
Right.
So their discomfort and lack of enjoyment weighed heavily on me. So that was an unfair watch.
Right.
And secondly, I think that I was looking for a childlike emotional reaction to the film, which was unfair of me to ask for in that moment. Now, some movies have continued to provide this. I am excited to watch this film with a different eye and look for things I like and look for the magic and the wonder and sort of the creativity of the film instead of just the story.
Yeah.
Which is what I was looking for.
Yeah. And I mean, but here's the thing. All those other things you identified are not bad things to be looking for. And most people who come to this film to watch it again, I think are probably looking to replicate that experience or to have that experience, a nostalgic wave of childlike wonder and emotional, you know, investment. Like, that's what I bet they're looking for when they think about The Dark Crystal. I just don't happen to care.
Yeah.
You know? And so that's not to say that somebody watching it shouldn't want that, and they shouldn't be we'll see. I mean, maybe that sticks out as something disappointing. And maybe the art isn't really all that fantastic. But I also know how goddamn hard it is to make a movie like this. It's crazily hard. And so there's gotta be just gallons of skill on display in terms of manipulating these things and building these little mini worlds. I just can't wait.
Yeah, I hope that provides some enjoyment to me. I will say, listen, we know, regular listeners of this podcast know that my childhood was pretty fucked up. We've learned. We've come to understand that in terms of film exposure. But this movie landed for me as a kid.
Right.
It haunted me in certain ways, and it had an emotional impact on me that feared me.
That's really worth looking at too. I mean, that's the, you know, we always come back to the question of like, what's the difference between watching it as an adult versus how you saw it as a kid? And can you possibly remember what it was to be a kid watching this movie that was effective? You telling that story, this is a derail, reminded me of the other time you were so crushed by expectations for a film. Which I like the story, and it's not to make fun of you, because I think people will understand it, is after you saw Matrix 2, and you were like, no, just wait for Matrix 3.
Yeah.
And you told everybody that. And then didn't you like marathon Matrix 1, 2?
I made my girlfriend at the time, and who was it? It was not you, right?
No.
It was a third friend involved in
this. I didn't know you. Yeah, this was before.
I timed it out. We had tickets to the first screening opening day. Of Matrix 3. I trusted the Matrix. I saw the Matrix Reloaded, and I was like, this is really questionable. But they, you know, made it as a first half of a longer film. So I got up, I made my girlfriend and this other friend who I don't remember who it was. We got up at like 5:30 in the morning. I timed it out, and we at like 5:41, we put on the Matrix. We promptly put in The Animatrix, then put in Matrix Reloaded, credits rolled, got in the car, drove to Man's Chinese Theater,
which was
the big place to see it,
yeah.
Had tickets for the 10 a.m. screening.
Oh, my God.
As we're waiting in line to go in, this car full of guys drives by and goes, Morpheus dies! And everyone booed them, and I was in it. I was so pumped. I thought that was funny, cool. Yeah. And we knew that, you know, they didn't know because it had just come out.
They couldn't know yet,
first showing. And we went in, and then I walked out of that screening just feeling like I had really done something wrong.
Yeah. Well, you led people down a path, and then you yourself had been in some way kind of hoodwinked. But I loved the idea that in both of these cases of you sitting there realizing something is horribly wrong.
Mm-hmm. There was definitely, for Dark Crystal, a creeping suspicion. And it wasn't like, oh, this is bad. It was that creeping feeling of boredom where you can feel your friends get restless.
Right.
They're looking around. Someone went to the bathroom. People started talking.
Ugh.
And I was just like boiling inside at myself.
Does that go away as you get older? Like, does that just, like, could you imagine being in that position again with that kind of responsibility, self-applied responsibility on your shoulders? Do you know what I mean?
Yeah. No, I could certainly, until I die, I could have that. The difference is that if I liked it, I wouldn't have cared. I'd be like, shut the fuck up, guys.
Oh, right.
You know what I mean? But it was a combination of them getting bored and me not being able to defend their boredom because I was like, oh, you're right. I'm bored too.
This is
a really bad situation I find myself in.
What do you do in that situation?
You just eat it, man. You fucking watch the movie and you leave the cemetery and you go, that wasn't as good as I remember, but we had fun, right, guys? And then we get in the car, and you don't mention it again.
Yeah.
You just move on. You just move on and act like you didn't do that terrible thing to your friends. Well, and then you don't invite those people to the cemetery screenings anymore.
Because you can't?
Because you've lost a little credibility.
Right.
You've lost a little out of the full season of – and they have good films there. And you know what made it worse, man? Here's what made it worse.
What?
Is that there were enough people at the screening that enjoyed it and were like, yeah, high five, Dark Crystal, to make my friends think that I was one of those people. And because I was being quiet about it, they're like, oh, I guess we just all have different taste in films. Mental note, don't go to films with Travis anymore.
Yeah.
But it wasn't like the whole place was distraught. It was definitely like a lower energy than normal by a substantive amount. But they had no reason.
They assumed you knew what you were talking about.
Because I said, I know this movie. I love this movie.
Yeah.
I had made the claim going in that this is a good film. I'm vouching for this experience.
Yeah.
Please come with me to have a lovely childhood experience full of mystery, wonder, and Dark Crystal delightfulness.
And it
wasn't that. And I couldn't be like, hey, guys, remember when I said I liked this movie and knew it really well? I was lying.
Yeah, it's totally
I couldn't say that.
Yeah, of course
you know,
not.
I had to just own up to it and be like, cool. Did you guys like it? No? Okay. Anyway, see you later.
Yeah. Well, that sucks.
Have a great night.
All right. Well, let's have that experience again.
Hey, Kaylin, want to watch one of my favorite childhood films?
Oh, I can't wait. You love this movie?
I love it. I know it
really
well. Oh, my
God. Oh, I'm really thrilled by
it. It's a delightful fairy tale adventure that's going to move you.
Boy, oh, boy.
Here we go.
What are those funny marks?
Oh, this is all writing.
What's writing?
Words that stay. My master taught me. When single shines the triple sun, what was sundered and undone shall be whole, the two made one, by Gelfling hand or else by none. By Gelfling hand? Do you know what that means, Kira?
Wait. This is a piece of the Dark Crystal.
Then that's what my master meant.
Yes.
I have to put
you
it...
You have to heal the... The Dark Crystal.
Prophecy!
Jim! Casey!
Stay! No, stay! Stay, M. friend!
So you love this movie.
I will say
this. This is one of your favorite movies.
I liked it better this time, believe it or not.
Well, guess what? You just volunteered to tell the story of the Dark Crystal.
Yeah, I know you're going to ask me to do that. You always ask like you act like it's a surprise every time you try to spring that on me. It's every episode. Around episode 20, I stopped being surprised. I was going to actually pitch that we tag team this because it might be more fun. So feel free to jump in. There is a Gelfling named Jen.
I wondered if you'd use the words.
Yeah, Gelfling. that's our ostensible main character who meets...
That's a boy.
Yeah.
Jen the boy.
Who meets a girl, Gelfling, named Kira. I'm going to do this a little bit out of order of the sequence.
Yeah, that's way out of order.
So there are two Gelflings left in the world. They both thought they were the last remaining Gelfling. The world is split into good and bad. There are mystics. There's 10 mystics left in the world, which are basically old Buddhist monks. And there's 10 Skeksis, who are basically 10 withered crone-like figures who delight in opulence and evil. Galen's falling asleep. And there's a crystal called the Dark Crystal. And 1,000 years ago, when the three suns lined up, a splinter, a shard of the Dark Crystal split off. And the 10 magic beings separated into good and bad sections, the mystics and the Skeksis. And then Jen has to go. Jen, I'm almost done. Jen, feel free to jump in if you want.
I was trying. Was that supposed to be a surprise?
Yeah.
It was.
Yeah. It's not a surprise, a plot twist, man. Plot development.
Okay.
Anyway, Jen and Kira have to go on an adventure to get the shard of the Dark Crystal and return it to the main crystal, thus unifying the good and bad sections of the 10 holy spirits, now reduced to 8 because 2 have passed away, to save the world. And then basically it's the origin story of Adam and Eve. It's Jen and Kira then have to repopulate the Gelfling population in this new beautiful world. Questions?
What? I did not get that last plot twist, but okay.
Yeah, they're supposed to go populate the world now.
Other things on the world. In the world, there's
well,
a hell of creatures and other like families that raised her that they've been pilfering for slave labor.
Yeah, pod people. They suck their energy.
pod people.
What are they called? Podlings? Podlings. They're called podlings.
Yeah, they have a thriving culture. How come it's on these two to repopulate the
Because
the
of the
world?
Prophecy, Kalen.
Okay, here's what I want to say about the movie. I'm not mad. Let's just say, like, I'm not mad or anything.
Yeah.
But I really, really wanted to like this movie.
Can I ask you a question as a lead into what you're about to say?
Mm-hmm.
Put yourself in my position.
Right.
You have invited four close friends who trust your taste to a outing that you've spent maybe as a combined group $120 on.
Right.
You've got tickets. You've got a picnic organized. You have given up your Saturday evening. Most people work. You've given up your one free night to go do this. And then that happens. Yeah. How do you feel about your friends?
How do I feel about my friends? Well,
if you're the guy who brought them, do you feel like I owe them an apology, or do you feel like...
Oh, boy, it'd be very confusing. I can't even begin to put myself in that position because I don't... I thoroughly don't get this movie. I don't get it.
Uh-huh.
And that's really destabilizing for me.
When did you know you were in trouble? That's my question for you. The movie starts with a 10-minute exposition monologue.
I loved that.
So you're still in.
Yeah.
What point did you fall off the horse, so to speak? Or start to suspect that the horse was unstable?
It's not like that, though. I didn't... The movie never, like, lies to you. It never, like, suddenly goes slack. It's just... Like, it's interesting, and so it never got, like, less interesting than it was.
You get that my complaint creeping boredom. It's creeping.
Oh, it's very, very, very boring. It's very boring. And criticism-wise, it is a, like... monumentally horribly told story. Like, it is so badly told, and I have lots of questions about the fantasy genre. Like, in general, this is like shaken me to the core of like, what is fantasy genre, and like, how do you tell a story in a fantasy world with no entry point? Because like, the story of the movie is like, okay, you get a vague sense that there's a prophecy, there's a couple of some cultures, and then every single thing that happens is like, how do we do this thing? And then it's like, well, there's a creature for that shows up that you never knew existed. And then it's like, well, how do we do this thing? And they're like, well, there's a rule that you didn't know about that you do. And then that does the thing you wanted. And so it's like narratively maddening because you have zero idea of where the story is going or what's supposed to happen, except that you know everything that's going to happen.
I was about to say that part's not true because you know at some point they move that shard of a crystal into the big crystal.
But it, well, right, of course. But like,
that's it.
But he doesn't know how to do it. He doesn't know what's going to happen next, and nobody else does. You know, he just like says like, what happens next? And then the thing
literally,
that happens
listeners,
next happens.
He literally says that a lot. What happens next? But the problem is, from an exposition standpoint, is that the viewer knows all of those things because they're told that in the first 5 minutes.
Kind
of. They're told. You have to put the shard back in the crystal.
Right. Right. No. But that's not even what I'm talking about. Is like, he literally is like, I the very beginning of the story is his elder is like, go find the shard of the crystal. And he's like, who has it? And he's like, this person. And then he goes, finds that person, gets the shard, and is like sitting there thinking to himself. Because there's, until he meets another character to talk to, he just thinks to himself, and you hear it. Mm-hmm. Thinking like, I don't know what to do now. What do I do now? I don't know. I don't either. I don't fucking know what to do now.
This is my main question for you. I have one main question for you.
But can I answer your first question first?
Yes, please.
Here's the part that I'm really torn on. I really want to love the artistry of the puppets and the world. And sometimes I did.
Agreed.
I think I have to say I hate the look of the bad guys, the Skeksis. I hate it. I think it is horribly ugly and...
I kind of disagree with you.
And impossible to differentiate from themselves.
I totally disagree with that. I'm so happy you said something that we can talk about. I disagree. I think they're all individual. I think you're immediately recognizable from one another. But and they're scary for kids. I think they're cool.
No, I think that they're terribly designed. You can't tell the difference between any one of them. And you can't really get individual features. They're just kind of crag shapes.
You totally can, I think.
What?
Yeah, there's eight, I would say six, clearly defined creatures that you immediately recognize.
The Skeksis?
Yeah, the Skeksis. You have Chamberlain, you have the Emperor.
You
have
know
little...
Chamberlain because he goes, ah, or whatever. The
no, he goes like this.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
1 million times.
A million times.
And there's like, but that seems to me to be telling us that they like, it's almost, I wonder if they fucking did that after the fact. Because they're like, nobody knows who this guy is. He looks exactly like all the other fucking Vulturosauruses. And now this guy, so we need to give him some defining characteristic.
I really disagree. I think,
I hated how they looked.
Okay, that's totally fair. Listen, there's clearly no right answer to this question.
Yeah.
I'm just happy to talk about something we could have possibly disagree about.
Well, you know what they, like... People like Guillermo del Toro, when he's talking about like monster and creature design, talks about the silhouette first. He's like, you got to create the silhouette of something that is recognizable and understandable. And I found that these were totally amorphous and I had no idea what they look like. Like I could, if I were to draw one now, I'd try to draw a vulture dinosaur, but I don't really know what they look like.
They got some little spikes on their back and stuff.
They do?
Yeah. And they have little guard plates.
What's their shape?
Put on. They're like scraggly vulture men with little dinosaur, stegosaurus things on their back.
And little dino teeth. And no defining skin or feature characteristics. Like, they're just like a crag. Yeah. I like the way the other things look. I like the way a lot of the creatures look. But
I don't mind the Skeksis.
But my point is, because you asked me a question, my point is... When I saw them and I saw how long we were going to have to spend with them,
that's when
I was like, I don't want to watch them.
Yeah.
I don't, this part of the thing, at least I don't want to watch. And I felt the same way basically about the main guy. I was like, I don't like how you look. I don't want to be around you. And the thing about the puppets that really got to me is they are like, tell me what you think of this. They are inherently inexpressive.
Absolutely.
They're like deeply inexpressive, which I don't have. I know that about puppets. You know, how could you expect a puppet to be expressive? Really? I mean, even like if you watched a whole movie of Yoda in Empire, you'd be like, that fucking thing doesn't do anything. Aww. He just has this dumb face. So that's a problem. And I also watched it thinking like the movements and the expressions are so subtle in the way that only like someone who fucking lives with puppets would ever appreciate,
mm-hmm.
that it does not translate, at least. And I kept wanting it to so badly. Like, please translate so that I can access the art here.
Mm-hmm.
And I never could.
I'll tell you when I got hopeful. In the opening, there's a scene that's about 49 minutes long where the Skeksis are gathered around the crystal and the crystal shooting some pink rays into their eyes. And that goes on for quite some time. But there's this series of shots where there's pink light going in and they introduce all of the characters that Kalen says look the same. But you can see micro movements on their faces. You see the cheeks adjusting, you see them breathing. I thought, oh, this is going to be cool. This is interesting.
Yeah.
There's a subtle sort of facial thing happening with these creatures. I lost the thread of that very quickly.
Well, yeah, because it's interesting for a second there, but then they are so slow and so micro in their actions and movements. And the story doesn't require them to ever really do anything.
There's this amazing scene. So the main Skeksis dies, the Emperor, and there's a bit of a power struggle to become the new Emperor for the remaining 13 days of the world before they all disappear or die or whatever. And the way they challenge each other is called Challenge by Stone, and a stone rises out of the ground with two Klingon swords, and then they take turns hitting this rock with a sword. And it's one of the most boring things I've ever seen.
It's amazingly boring.
It's insanely boring.
And one of the only, like... I mean, look, here's the thing. Now it sounds like I'm just slamming the movie. I'm fucking interested in it. Even though I didn't really enjoy it, and even though I think it's horribly boring, and even though I think that this art was not particularly well expressed in this story, there are things in it that are fucking super fascinating and cool. And we can talk about those in a minute, but just to carry on this scene, this rock-hitting scene... It's the weirdest part of the whole movie.
Yeah,
after they fucking... One guy chops the rock, he successfully hits it so hard that he chops the rock in two. Guess what they do to the loser? They strip him.
They defrock him.
They strip him naked. This fucking vulture dinosaur standing there having its rags yoinked off its body. And this male who goes, what's he do? Yeah, who has the voice of a woman, clearly, and which really threw me because I was like, what is it? A man or a woman? Are they all men? Like, but then they keep saying him.
Yeah, they're all men, obviously.
And then he's there for the longest time in this weird, like, naked dinosaur, like, pose up against a rock. It's super creepy.
Yeah. Before that, too, this is what bugged me.
And then they're like, get out of here. And he gathers his clothes.
Wait, back it up. Because the rock ritual has been done countless times. They've been around for 1,000 years. This rock has been, you know, hit by a bunch of swords.
It's all chipped.
And then... the first guy takes a swing. I can't believe we're talking about this. The first guy takes a swing of the sword. It's like this mighty swing, and there's like a spark, and everyone's like, good swing. That was a good one. Yeah. You hear people go, oh, that was good.
Yeah,
and
he then, like, looks around, nodding.
He's like,
pride.
I did it good. Yeah. And then the other guy swings, and everyone's like, oh, that was good. And I thought to myself, do they just then vote on who swung the best at the rock?
Because... I thought about this, too. I think it's the how deep is the chip. Like they have rulers and they measure and like, cause like they're not appreciably different.
No,
in depth.
They're not. And they don't hit at the same spot. And then the guy obviously wins cause he knocks the fucking rock in half. But in theory, there's been lots of contests where someone's been like, that guy won. He chipped the rock the best.
Yeah.
A fucking ridiculous idea.
Yeah.
It's a crazy idea.
It doesn't, I mean like, yeah, oh. Whatever. It didn't really make any sense. None of the rules of the movie make sense because there aren't any. It doesn't. The other thing that the movie fails to do, which I wish to Christ it didn't. I wish I could say that I thought it was successful on this level, is create a, even like, let's say by the end of it, a world that you vaguely understand.
Yeah.
I have no clue how this world works. I mean, I get this prophecy or whatever, but like, I don't understand at all what the laws of the nature are, or like, there's nothing coherent. It's just like some random weirdness that happens scene after scene with no nothing that builds, nothing that
there's
feeds
a value
off one another.
To that.
There's just random animals.
If the movie is for, if you think about it in a Sesame Street framework or a child framework of like 4 to 6, there's value in Jen repeatedly saying, what am I doing? Oh, I have this shard of crystal. I have to go put in the big crystal. There's a lot of repetition. There's a lot of things for young children, I would argue. But then there's parts of the movie that feel a little too scary for kids that young. And I was wrestling a lot with, who is the movie for?
I really wondered if it would scare people. I mean, obviously it has, I guess. I guess that's part of its rep. But like, I was watching it being like,
They suck the life out of Fraggles. And then drink their essence.
I know. It's just so fucking boring.
That's straight up Hug-A-Bunch, man.
I know. And I thought that should seem scary.
It did to me. Well, there's a horrific image of a
that
Fraggle.
That part's pretty fucked up.
Yeah, Fraggle that part's pretty good. Sucked of its fucking life.
Yeah.
And it's become a shell of itself.
Yeah, as the like expression, light goes out of its eyes and, you know, it's cool.
Yeah, I remembered that as being something fairly terrifying. I don't remember what age I was when I saw this, but I am a little perplexed about who the movie's for and why adults have any sort of affinity for it, besides the fact that as children it must have scared us.
Well, what...
must have scared me.
I think that we are truly beyond a particular era here, because I know kids still watch Sesame Street and stuff, but like the thought of a child sitting there and watching this movie, and not any child right now in 2017 not being bored out of their goddamn mind.
Oh, totally.
I was like, how did anyone ever sit still for this? Like, I really, as a kid, like what kid would sit there rapt with this? I mean, I can't tell if you haven't seen it in a while. It is amazingly slow and like almost like intentionally so. Like,
oh, for
they
sure.
move with
it
extreme...
feels like a 7-hour film. It's an hour and a half. It felt like 7 hours.
Yeah, because the characters are moving so slow. And some of those things I thought were fairly beautiful. The Mystics race, I love.
The best part of the film.
And I love them singing, and I love their slow migration across the fucking countryside.
Those elephant shots are awesome.
Yeah, they're killer. Can I ask you a question?
Yeah.
I know this is getting down. I know. Get into it. I know there's not a good answer to this.
Get into the white meat.
Why did this guy have to go get that thing?
He's the prophecy man.
But let me just... They know where the thing is. They know where the shard is.
Yeah, it's 2 feet away from where he started.
Yeah. They know where it is. They know who has it.
Uh-huh.
They know where the castle is.
Yep.
They wind up at the castle at the same second the guy is at the castle. Who? Guess who else is there? The person who originally had the shard. They all of those characters want to achieve this prophecy. So why this fucking dweeb who doesn't know shit?
Prophecy, dude.
But what is... Why?
Because that's... Here's the thing. This film has the trappings...
Everyone ends up in the same room.
It has... Of course. It has the structure of a mythic, vast storytelling thing. You have things like a Ben Kenobi character, and you have things like Yoda-type stuff. But it's none of it pays off or actually makes sense. It's right. Just the painting of the outline of the thing. And so you have a prophecy, and here's your guy who's a dumb, you know, Frodo type who doesn't know what he's doing and has to go do the thing, even though he doesn't think he can do it, to save the world. But it doesn't matter, and it's not built. It's just gestured to.
Yeah. I know. I mean, I know that that's the answer. Of course I know that. But watching the movie, it was like a
mystery when you're watching it.
It was a lesson in like how to nullify tension and stakes, because like this guy who they've sent on this quest to go find this crystal shard that he has to jam into the larger crystal, which by the way, I don't even understand how that got dislodged from the crystal.
Not a clue. Well, the three suns lined up, bro.
Yeah, whatever. And so you're watching that, and then when he has it and he's inch by inch, you know, making his way to this castle by himself or with this girl that he just found, then all the mystics just decide seemingly out of nowhere that it's time to walk to the castle. And because they walk at the pace of a fucking inch a day across the landscape, you're like, all tension is gone. You know they're getting to that castle because nothing's stopping them. Mm-hmm. They have no obstacle between their home and the castle. So why would you ever care if this little dork can get there?
Well, it's a tone poem for kids. That this thing is just not built for plot. It really isn't. And I think my mistake going in a year and a half ago was looking for some sort of plot that would keep my attention. And you cannot go into this film thinking that.
I started this conversation even before the movie knowing that that would be the case.
It's worse than you thought.
It's worse than I thought because it's going out of its way to drain tension. That's what I kept thinking. Yep. Is like, why is this movie trying so hard to suck the life out of its narrative progression? And that baffled me.
It is confusing. You'd think if there's a movie co-directed by Jim Henson and Frank Oz, about puppets and myth, post-Star Wars, you'd think, this thing's going to rule.
Yeah.
Like, these guys get it. Like, Frank Oz just went through at the 82, so he'd been through two Star Wars.
Well, I don't know. Was he on Star Wars 1?
Oh, I guess he wasn't.
He worked on Yoda. He's on
Empire. Oh, yeah, sure.
But
he's been through it and has certainly seen Episode 4. Like, this guy understands what they're doing.
Yeah, he knows the concept of an entertaining character.
He knows also the concept of a plot and a myth, and it just falls so flat, this thing.
So, all of that said, and I think you were sort of pushing into this arena, so let's just do it. There are a few sequences I adored. You know, there's a part where everything is fucking standard, so you know already what happens as soon as it starts happening. I liked the part where which is the same as like the beginning of Willow, where they're just partying in some dumb village and like listening to music and in a mead hall. And I liked that. And I liked that monster attack. I thought that monster busting into their place was cool.
Oh, that was cool. You know what? You're going to laugh at me on this. I thought the dream sharing thing was cool.
Oh, I like that. No, I'm not going to laugh at you. I like that too. I actually loved that because so many cool things were suddenly flung at you. And I was like, this is the movie I'd far prefer.
It's the most action packed part
like
of
a
the thing.
They're cool abacus and there's like cool harps and music and stuff, and they're learning all this crap. They're in waterfalls.
Listeners, basically, when our two Gelfling halves meet, the boy and the girl, they join hands and they have a dream share. They call it something else. I forget what it's called. And it basically gives you the backstory of each character through the eyes of them seeing the backstory of the other person.
Yeah.
It's super cool.
Yeah,
it was
awesome.
Really cool storytelling and really cool visuals and interesting stuff.
No, I 100% agree.
All right, that's cool. I woke me up a little bit.
Yep.
I was like, oh,
I liked that. I liked that that part in the town, and then I really liked their little river journey, which is crazy because Jim Henson and Frank Oz wanted to give you the impression of traveling across a great distance, and you know they've had to manufacture all these riverbanks with all these weird creatures to give you a sense that they'd been fucking floating for a long time. So it's exactly like, you know, any number of other scenes where people float down a river, but it reminded me a lot of like Night of the Hunter, where they're just singing a song as they cruise down this thing with all kinds of wacky, weird plant and animal life on the banks of the river. And I was like, I could watch this for a long time.
That's supposed to
this
be
weirdly,
a lot of the enjoyment of the film, I think.
Yeah.
I could have done more of that. But by the way, I have to agree with Kaylin that the Nazgul stand-in people in the movie are these beetle creatures. There's like seven beetle creatures that are pretty... When they're not facing camera and doing like sort of electric boogaloo moves, they're pretty cool and scary and interesting, I think.
They're just big beetles. They're
pretty good.
Big bugs.
But like if they ever face camera, which they do three times in the film, they are comically not scary.
Yeah.
I mean, they have breakdancey moves to them. It's not good or interesting or scary.
I didn't notice any breakdancing.
Oh, if I was not so tired right now, I would stand up and do it for you. Because
that's the other thing. The movie super drained us. Like
I like dozed off in the middle of the climax of the film.
Yeah.
Like the height of the film when the Skeksis and the Mystics are rejoining into their ethereal light being figures. I was like, oh, fuck this.
I'm
closing my eyes.
Like, I know Jim Henson, let's talk about him for a minute here, because he came from like there what was going on do you know this like there's a generation who's about probably about his age, my dad counts, you know, who read the shit out of Lord of the Rings and stuff and like knew all of that kind of genre of fantasy film.
Yeah.
And it's not the like this movie doesn't remind me of like Dungeons and Dragons. It's like it reminds me of that kind of 60s vibe. Like, when you look at, like, illustrations from Lord of the Rings from the 60s.
Absolutely.
You know what I mean?
Oh,
so
absolutely.
What is that? What's the deal with that? Why was that
a thing? I think
it's
a flower child. There's this art. I mean, Lord of the Rings does this straight up, but there's this... there's two things you're talking about here. One is content, one is aesthetic. The aesthetic is inarguably the 60s aesthetic.
Right.
Is it Alan... What's his name who did all the drawings for
him? Yeah, Alan... Taylor?
Something like that. I don't think that's right.
Anyway,
that
guy. I know what you mean.
It's his style for sure. And they did a lot of concept art of Lord of the Rings from his drawings back in the 60s and 70s. But there's that to it. But there's also this sense of artificial dichotomies coming out of the late 60s, which is people have been split into their peaceful being and their evil being. And you have to reconcile the two. And there's these, you know, the world is split into good and evil. And Lord of the Rings traffics in that, certainly. And intentionally so. And I think to smart effect. This just is gestures towards it at best.
It's Alan Lee.
Alan Lee.
Alan Lee.
There's something I want to talk about that I think I Googled one thing in the movie. You'll never guess what it was, but I was convinced of something that I was wrong about. there are loads of echoes, or I guess to say precursors to Labyrinth in this film. Loads and loads and loads. The one thing I Googled is I was convinced. So there's a character named Agra, who has an identical voice to the bag lady from Labyrinth. Oh, dearie. Oh. She does this whole thing. And I was convinced it was the same actress. It's not.
Can I ask you a question?
Yeah.
I lost interest in that line of thought, but I did get, I picked up.
I want to come back to Labyrinth.
Different.
I'm not.
I want to talk about Labyrinth.
Okay.
Is Labyrinth better than this?
Oh, fucking 1,000,000%, you idiot. Fuck you. Fuck you, you dumb idiot. I hate this podcast. How dare you even ask that question? I'm fucking furious.
Well, I don't know.
This is the most awake I've been in weeks. Are you insane?
Wait a minute. So you think Labyrinth is awesome?
No, it's better than this by 1,000,000,000%. God damn it.
Does everyone think that?
Yeah, though, if you have eyes and ears, you think that. I'm sick now.
But people obviously like this movie. They think they like this movie. When's the fucking last time you saw Labyrinth? You would have yelled at me if I'd asked about Dark Crystal before you'd ever seen Dark Crystal.
No. That is crazy. Labyrinth is so much fun compared to this. Labyrinth is a candy bar, and this is a goddamn sautéed carrot. This is stupid. I can't believe you would even draw that comparison.
What's the difference?
Labyrinth has a plot. It has David Bowie. It has music. It gets its tone correct.
Okay.
It understands what it's supposed
to
do.
What is its relation? Does it have a relationship to this movie? I mean, you're talking about character voices.
Oh, for sure.
That sound the same.
No, I think it has. I don't know if it has plot relation.
So wait a minute. Does it fix it? Does it fix? Do they? Is there an argument to be made? They watched the Dark Crystal result and they were like, "Ooh, we need to recalibrate."
Here's what I would say: the Dark Crystal is acceptable to me if it's a testing ground for some of the ideas in Labyrinth. You have the dog character, which doesn't talk in this and doesn't talk in Labyrinth.
Isn't that a John Carter thing?
I don't know enough about it.
I think that's, well, I mean, that's dumb.
I'm not
character.
Saying that they invented this, but the puppet of Sir Didymus is in this movie more or less. It's got the same sort of echoes of what's funny about it.
God, you're a fucking dork.
Well, this is the movie we watched a bunch as a kid.
Sir Didymus?
Yeah.
That's the name of a character from
Labyrinth? I think. I have not looked this up, but I'm guessing it's close to that.
Ew.
There's a lot of things that are like testing ground for Labyrinth, and because they're presented seriously here and they're presented playfully in Labyrinth, it just works better. It just works better.
Playfully. So Labyrinth, does Labyrinth gun for a younger audience?
Labyrinth, I think, has a target in mind, which I don't think this movie does, honestly. It has a target in mind. It has a cohesive plot. It's a girl going to rescue her brother.
Right.
We know what we're doing.
Right.
It has a fucking weird performance by David Bowie.
Right.
It has awesome music, which this movie does not have.
No.
And I just think there's...
What did they want this movie to be? I mean, like, let's just...
That's the big mystery.
What did they want? I mean, I know that Jim Henson, you know...
Don't know.
He's obviously an interesting guy. He wanted to do something that was beyond the kiddie world. You know, he wanted to do that for a long time. And he obviously truly, deeply believed in this mechanism of storytelling through puppets and that it had an advantage that live action didn't have. And watching this movie, I was like, they're obviously going for something that I can't put my finger on in terms of audience and connection. What do you think the answer is as far as, I have an answer, but what do you think the answer is as far as who's the audience?
I wrestle with it. I don't know. The construction of the film makes me think it's 4 to 6 year olds. I bet you he's gunning for 9 to 12 year olds. Is my guess. If I was to ask him during the making of the film,
I have a weird answer. I think he's going for like 16 to 25.
Who smoke pot?
Yeah. Who liked pot, who liked drugs, who likes
fantasy
music.
I get what
music.
You're saying, but I have to think he's smarter than that because it fails to do things that age group
needs.
But
see, this is the thing you see with these kind of adults who make entertainment for kids is these things get fucking mixed up over time. And like, I think it's happened to some of the Pixar directors. Oh my God. Travis just tried to swat a fly and hit the couch and then just went into paroxysms of pain. Would you hit a nerve?
I jam my thumb. That really hurt.
That fly really got the better of you, man.
I jammed my thumb good.
Oh, my God.
Oh, this fucking movie.
Were they, like, I guess what I mean is they can't tell the difference anymore between themselves and children. And they... create a fake
100%
hybrid of adult child that doesn't exist.
100%. I agree with that entirely. But there are things that this movie does that are concessions to childhood storytelling needs, which are repeating over and over again what's happening, repeating the plot over and over again, making sure you're crystal, no pun intended, clear on what is happening in every moment of the film, and not stringing together a larger plot in a way that makes you have to track anything.
But I still don't know what the fuck happened in this movie. So I don't know that, like, yes, I think they may have done that, and that may have been an after-the-fact concession. But I think they thought they were making a movie for a human being that doesn't exist, except a maybe very small segment of people who, you know, are either immature adults or overly mature, fantasy-obsessed children. But all of this to say... You see this shit. You see this happen a lot. Like I feel like we've seen failures like this quite a few times. I just saw it in fucking. You know what this reminded me of?
Tell me.
Warcraft.
Okay.
That new movie that Duncan Jones made.
Yeah.
Who is that for? That's for weird. Like it's the weirdest movie I've seen in a very very long time. It's marginally entertaining in how weird it is. But who is it for? It's you know the only people. It's got the same problem as this where it's like. it's got the beats of a childhood story, which are clear, but it's gunning for an adult, young adult or adult audience who plays that video game, who still loves fantasy worlds. And I have friends who love fantasy worlds. And maybe this would be a question
call
for them.
Call them out right now.
Well, some of them listen to the show.
Say
my
the names.
Friend, me and Eve's friend, Gio, was growing up. He's the guy who read the Willow sequel novels.
Oh, Gio, you got to come on.
And he loved that. Willow. And yeah. So when we did the episode, he was like, he listened, you know, attentively. And this feels like I would really, really like, and I'm not like, I'm being sincere. I'd like to ask him to explain this genre to me. Because there is this weird middle ground that I'm really struggling
with. What's frustrating about this is it doesn't feel like a mystery to me the way it feels like a mystery to you. And I'd like it better if it was more of a mystery. Because if you set out to pitch, hey, Jim Henson's like, I want to do a grand mythic fairy tale story of light versus dark and the two schisms of our personalities and what that does to the world. And I want to do it with puppets, and I want to have a grand quest, and I want it to involve fucking crystals. I get it. I'm into that.
You know what
else?
And then
the execution falls way apart.
Can I tell you what is also truly at the root of this for me?
What?
I wanted to like this movie so badly, and I want to like this genre so badly. And I never have.
I don't think it's fair to call this part of a genre. I really don't. And I know what you mean, but I don't think that's fair to the genre.
Really?
Like, I don't. I don't think it's all, at all indicative of... Because one of the things this genre, if we're going to put it into a genre, tends to have is at the very least a simplistic, propulsive forward plot. I don't think this has that. I don't think it tries to
okay,
have that.
But this is the question I was asking earlier. Because I think Willow suffers from this too.
Okay.
Is... What is it about? How do you handle this genre where, you know, we write science fiction. So there's similarities,
yep.
But where you have to, if you're going to get into a story quickly, you have to be revealing the world as you move through the story.
Mm-hmm.
How do you handle that in a fantasy context if you're not introducing like a kid goes through a wardrobe and they're from our world and they're seeing this through their eyes? Like, this movie is hermetically sealed. There's no outsider. I mean, there's a naive character who goes and experiences things he didn't prepare for, but like he doesn't not know this world.
Mm-hmm.
So how do you like handle the fantasy genre in that sense?
Well, I think it's Jesus. Your son is pushing things around the floor in a really aggressive way.
Yeah.
This is not a cop out answer, but kind of is. It depends on the world that you're existing in, and not that this is a fantasy world, but Mad Max Fury Road exposits it through action and says we're not going to stop to do anything, and good luck keeping up. Other movies think, okay, well, here's what you need to know. We'll give you this, and then catch up to the rest.
It seems to think of it as an asset,
yeah.
Which is that, you know, how do we do this? No problem. I've got wings.
But that's what makes me think it's for 6 to 8 year olds.
And then you would have a joyful feeling of that. But like instead, this movie I think fails at that, which is that like, so? Like, of course, you just made that up.
Yeah.
Like that's how I kept thinking. It's like, well, okay, anybody can just make up a new thing to solve the problem. But I sense in my gut that even if this fails at it, the genre uses that, and people get great joy out of that. Of like, I never saw this fucking fantasy nonsense coming from.
Well, listen, Lord of the Rings. Let's talk about Lord of the Rings, which I guess if we're talking about genre, that's at least in the ballpark of what this is attempting to do. There's accusations of that for Lord of the Rings. I would argue right. A lot of that is built in, but Tom Bombadil is like the hallmark of a bullshit idea,
right?
That he comes in and he's just can do whatever. He's ultimately powerful and can do whatever the fuck he wants.
Right.
Like there's examples of that in other things, and of course they cut that from the film because Peter Jackson's like, well, that doesn't really
right
lend or subtract to anything here.
Right.
Sure. I mean that's part of the thing. If you exist in a magic world, you have to set your rules very, very closely. And I think we've had lots of conversations about what's arbitrary and what's inherent in the idea, and we limit our arbitrary ideas.
I think you're right. I remember we closed last season of our show talking about cohesion and you know, things that are complete unto themselves. And I'm satisfied with that answer actually that you just gave, which is just that Dark Crystal doesn't feel like it sets down any rules, and it doesn't feel like it plays by any rules, and it counts on...
There are no rules.
There are none, and it counts on the feeling... It counts on engaging you with the feeling of kind of whimsy and invention, but it does that in the most slow, dreary sort of a way. That
non-plot driven way.
Yes, that it's a very confusing experience.
I found it confusing. It's very confusing. I'm livid that you think this might be better than Labyrinth.
I didn't say that. I was asking you a question. But to even pose the
question makes me think you're an idiot. Makes me so mad.
Well, we just...
Do you remember Labyrinth at all?
No. No.
Okay.
God, no.
Listeners, I'm going to set this up for the Labyrinth episode, that this is the movie my family watched over and over. My sister...
Labyrinth was.
My sister called it the Sarah movie. She, every day after school, would pop it in. It was our VHS. She put it in the VCR.
The what? The Sitter movie?
Sarah movie.
Sarah movie.
I assume that's the name of the main character in Labyrinth.
Okay.
Because she called it the Sarah movie.
Got it.
But Sarah...
Did you watch Dark Crystal because you loved Labyrinth? Or was that related?
No, I Dark Crystal, I watched presumably the same way we all did. We all saw it once, I guess, as a kid. Right. And it stuck with me. There's images from this. Like the image of the soul being sucked out of that little pod creature for sure stuck with me. I remember that scene. Like that was a damaging, memorable scene for me as a child.
You know what the one thing I would say for this movie that I guess is a positive, although it doesn't play as one, but again, it makes it interesting, is this movie, and let's say going against the idea that it's intended for little children, it has not one second of low, goofy comedy.
It takes itself very seriously.
The entire time. Like you would think a movie with puppets in a fantasy world, you've all seen that, and in every single one, there's some goofy business.
And Labyrinth leans so hard into that.
Right.
That movie's supposed to be
fun.
But
even in the
fun.
Great ones, it's like Lord of the Rings has this thing coming out the ears. It's so goofy all the time. And this one has not one second of goofy stuff.
No, there's no goofy at all.
Really weird.
It's a very strange movie. And what makes it good for our podcast, just to reiterate, is that everyone thinks this movie's good. Like,
I know
it's a movie you mention to people and they go, oh, okay, cool. Like when I said, guys, let's go see The Dark Crystal at Hollywood Cemetery, everyone was like, great idea, Travis.
Well,
that
you know
sounds
what, though?
Fun.
Good title. How could it, and the thought that like, how could a Jim Henson fantasy movie be bad is what I had going into it and sort of feeling like, well,
at the very least,
you'll
have good ideas.
Yeah, yeah. It'll have good ideas. It'll look awesome. And the this sounds like, now I know I'm like brushing with a broad paintbrush, but like it made me think like I don't get or need the 80s. Like I was like, this is one of those things that is in its era, if it ever made any sense, which I'm not necessarily convinced it did, but which couldn't happen now, and we're fine. It's no need to ever try this.
I mean, what makes me upset about this movie mostly is the potential, right. Because the pedigree of it's obviously great. Those two dudes are awesome. And they've done amazing things, and they will continue.
Well, and they Frank certainly Oz did. I mean, yeah, Frank Oz went on to direct some incredible, incredible movies.
Absolutely. He's still around doing cool stuff. Well, hey, so, he directed the show. By the way, if you live in New York, go see this show in and of itself. Frank Oz directed it. It's there now. It's great. It's incredible. He's still doing great work. He's a genius.
Yeah.
And to have this just be such a mess feels extra frustrating to me, extra annoying.
Yeah.
And to be bored by an hour and a half movie that ostensibly would be full of awesome ideas and beautiful images and to struggle to keep your eyes open at the climax of the film is just disappointing.
Yeah. And it does. But now all of that said, I know that I'm saying this again and it sounds like I'm apologizing, which I kind of am because I wanted to like it so much. It does have beautiful stuff. There is like, we didn't even talk about that really, which again is a thing that comes out of nowhere. But they get on these really incredible running, galloping creatures.
I remember those.
Which are awesome.
They're great.
So awesome. And those have beautiful and incredible silhouettes that are fun to look at, fun to watch move.
They're killer.
It's unusual. You can only do it with puppets. It could only ever look that way if it were puppets. I loved it.
But then it gets brutalized and eaten by beetles.
Well, I don't care about that.
Well, I'm just saying in our age range conversation, like, what a thing for a six-year-old to see.
Yeah, those things are dead now.
They're dead.
Killed.
One got knocked off a cliff and bashed onto rocks below. One got eaten and dismembered by beetles.
You know what else, man, is I was thinking about kids watching this, and in a scene like that, for instance, these two leads, which are I don't know, they're I guess they're kind of like Fraggles. They just have,
they're beautiful Fraggles.
Yeah, but their mouths don't move, as they're not as wide. They're like really little minimal mouths. And they're so inexpressive that I didn't know if they gave a shit that their fucking galloping animals died. You don't know. They don't have any dialogue to that effect. And so a kid watching this has, I found even as an adult, I have no emotional barometer.
No, it's just terrifying.
My characters never tell me how I'm supposed to feel about any of this.
No.
It's because they can't. Because they're puppets and they never talk about it.
Yeah. Well, sometimes he thinks things like, this is scary. Where do I go now? But always in that tone. It's always like in a monotone of, this is terrible.
Yeah.
What do I do now?
Yeah, well, and by the way, that fucking bug scene where it destroys that bar or whatever is good because those puppets are panicking.
Yeah.
Because those puppets are super scared and freaking out, and that's the only time that ever happens. I loved that thing.
Well, they have mouths that open.
Where that one is like beating it with a stick like Yoda. Like, that was cool, and like where it was like picking up puppets and throwing them and everyone's freaking out. Where that kid, there's a puppet kid that's holding a doll that's all scared.
That's awesome.
Yeah, which is like super standard. Like any normal action movie sequence would have that, you know, like Conan has that kind
of
thing.
Lord of the Rings has that.
Lord of the Rings has it. And when you put it in a puppet, you get it because you can, those are big external indicators of like fear and stuff. And the faces of these two main puppets are so horrible that you never get that feeling on their adventure.
It's like if you Botoxed Fraggles and then made them the fucking leads.
It is like that. It's like if you Botoxed Fraggles. It's totally like that. They can't move their faces.
Yeah, but the little Muppets are absolutely Fraggles, and they're awesome. They're great. Yeah. They had this whole Titanic basement scene, Irish dancing. It's the same music from Titanic the same dancing.
It's even like the same beats. Like they're talking about the adventure and someone pulls the guy up to go dance. And he's like, whoa, I guess Titanic. I'm dancing.
Yeah. So I think you got to leave this on the shelf, guys. Wait, what's the...
We'll never know. We'll never have a system that makes sense.
I think don't watch it again. No. Let me be very clear with you.
I agree. That would be the clearest thing to say.
You got to live on the memory, because the memory of this is good. The memory of this was very good.
Yeah.
I can't wait to watch Labyrinth. I really like the movie Labyrinth. I have a lot more to say about it that we have not covered.
This movie does not benefit from an adult psychological point of view, because there are too many flaws, too many problems. A kid, you need a great deal of kind of naive kid imagination. And I know maybe thinking you're like, well, I can apply that, and this movie maybe is for me, and fuck you guys. Nah, it's
we
boring.
Love The Brave Little Toaster, you guys.
Yeah, it's too
that
boring.
Movie's awesome.
This movie's too
we
boring.
We loved Hug a Bunch. This movie sucks my balls.
Here we go. Why don't you pick up a movie for us?
I wanted to pull Best in Show, and I put it on top so I could pull it, but then we buried it, and I'm going down deep. Because
it's got to be random. We're sticking with it.
I really want to see Best. I want a comedy right now.
Random.
I want to pull a comedy.
I want to.
Give me the perfect movie.
I want a deep, dark drama.
Deep, dark drama?
Yeah.
All right. I want a comedy. Well,
Who wins?
You kind of win.
Yay!
You actually win.
What is it?
Jacob's Ladder.
Oh, my God.
Not a comedy.
No. Lots to say. One of my favorite movies.
It is. Actually, you've gone on record on this podcast as saying this is...
I would argue it is one of the... In my experience in Hollywood, Jacob's Ladder gets referenced more than almost any movie ever. Like, people talk about this thing constantly.
And you reference Lorenzo the Lord. Those are the two movies you seem to bring up.
But I do love Jacob's Ladder, and I have a lot to talk about.
All right, well, join us next week when we segue from The Dark Crystal to Jacob's Ladder on...
Your favorite movie,
sorry.